Welcome to Oz NFTs, NFTs are for Everyone podcast.
Every week, we'll bring you Australian artists, collectors, and builders that are paving the way in the Web3 space.
We'll go deep into their stories, how they're reshaping digital culture, and how you can get involved.
Yeah, don't be afraid of failure. If you're afraid of failure, then you're never going to get anywhere forward. You need to do things that you're scared of, because otherwise you'll never move forward in your life. If you're not doing things that make your heart beat a little bit, make you feel a little bit nauseous, then you're not going to evolve as a human being.
This evening, we have the pleasure of sharing time with Daniel Tahore and Jack McGraw from Brisbane, Australia. Daniel's a DAO master at MotorDAO and Pummel, co-founder of Jackbase and Emanate, all crypto and NFT-orientated projects orientated from decentralizing the music industry, except Pummel. Daniel is a thriving entrepreneur, forward thinker, builder, and innovator in the music Web3 NFT space, spearheading projects' growth, managing communities, and is on the ground level connecting in the metaverse with users and builders of Web3 music. Jack is co-founder of Jackbase, a full-time musician and Web3 entrepreneur. Jack has produced the majority of his catalog himself and takes influence from hip-hop and R&B, melding these two together into a beautifully auditory experience. Jack is making his dreams into reality in the Web3 music space. Dan, Jack, welcome. Thank you for joining us at the Paddo, who are also hosting the NFT Breeze Vegas in Brisbane today.
That's the best intro I've ever gotten in my life, to be honest. Thank you so much.
Hell yeah.
Bro, who is this guy?
Hey, Bert, nice to be having us, straight up.
Jack and Daniel, thank you for sharing us today, sharing time with us today. We want to just jump straight into what MotorDAO is and what the hell is a DAO master?
It's a big question. MotorDAO is a framework, and our whole thesis is to be able to bring fair ownership rights to musicians on chain. So we're pretty much just trying to give the power back to the artist, and we're just trying to level the playing field. A lot of the music industry right now is you'll have a lot of, it's almost like plutocratic in a way. You'll have people up at the top end who are earning a lot of money, and you'll have people down at the lower end who are kind of not struggling, but, you know, just not making ends meet. We're trying to make it so that if you're not the Justin Bieber of the world or the Kanye West of the world, you can still monetize your craft. You can still make a living off of what you love doing, and you can, you know, you can turn your art into a proper form of monetization in a way. DAO Master, it's kind of like I'm the first one in Web3, which is fun. We kind of just coined the term. The idea is that I kind of take a bird's eye view on companies and essentially help to support the company in any way, shape, or form across, you know, tokenomics, gamification, marketing, community growth, and management. Essentially, I will talk to the team and I'll say to them, what can I do to make your life easy? What can I do to kind of remove any blockers you have in your way, and how can I support you? It's kind of a flip on the usual Web2 space where you're like, maybe you're a boss and you say, you need to get your work done. I don't care how you do it. You just need to do it by this date. It's more so, how can I make sure that you get your work done and we can achieve this goal together? So that kind of, yeah, it's that execution on goals. So I kind of work closely with the founders of companies and just make sure that everyone is thriving and having a really good time and kind of being able to punch their work out, because as long as people feel supported, generally speaking, they're off to the races. You don't need to be kind of breathing down their necks in a way.
So providing support from an aerial perspective, yeah, and just making sure everyone's empowered enough to work in that non-hierarchical structure.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Like we'll have meetings every couple of days, and we just go through, like, we use ClickUp as an organizational tool, and we just kind of go through it in the meetings and we'll say, hey, do you have any blockers, or is there anything that is bothering you? How can I support you with that? And if anything is, you get an action pretty much immediately in that meeting, and then you can move forward knowing that that person has got the tools, or they've got the resources, they've got whatever they need to execute on that task.
That's an incredible role, very solution orientated.
Yeah.
Don't really hear about these kinds of roles in standard kind of Web2 companies. I think that's a pretty, you're very broad, but very deep as well.
Yeah.
You touched on a multitude of topics just then, including tokenomics, organizational structures, workflows.
Yeah.
These are all very high operational skills that most people, and I guess in like a Web2 kind of industry, don't really get touched. And really focusing on that empowerment, mm-hmm, of individuals to complete their work, because you ultimately have the tools to do that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'd love to dive into that a little bit later.
Yeah, of course.
And I guess, did this transition from DAO Master naturally into working together with Jack to produce this awesome project, Jackbase, where your thesis is to turn your fans into your team?
You want to tell them about it? The journey and the story?
Could you tell us a bit about the project and how this has changed your music consumption model from consumption to value for value?
As Peter just stated at the start, I do work in legacy music. That's my day job. I'm an engineer, audio engineer, producer, songwriter, composer. I have dived into Web3 over the past year. And Jack's Bass is the name of the first project in Web3 that we're working on. Basically, the aim of Jack's Bass is to decentralize my team, connect with fans easier, and a one-stop shop portal where I can release merch, do online concerts, giveaways, whatever it might be, and most importantly, obviously, release music content. Honestly, we probably started working on this in the middle of last year, end of last year, I would say. And I think, yeah, we've just been working really hard to kind of grow the community and figure out new ways to engage with people and, you know, make it, make it happen for us.
That's really cool. So you've been here for a year and you're already doing all of this. It's amazing.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm slowly learning. I'm learning new things every day. For anyone out there listening, it's never too late to jump into the Web3 space. Like, yeah, this dude, guy here, I ask him questions every day. I honestly only learned what Polygon was in the middle of last year, and that's the honest truth. The main thing is, if you're an artist who struggles with getting exposure, with getting marketing, publishing, we all know that the trials and tribulations of legacy music is horrible. It's a if you know, you know type space. Yeah. No one's going to message you and be like, hey, this is how pub deals work.
Yeah.
This is how splits work. This is how labels will and won't approach you. I feel like Web3 is breaking into that space and breaking all that down and just breaking it down to what can I give you and what can you give me and how can we help each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main thing that we're trying to work on right now.
Nice. Honestly, your mission is incredible. And, you know, based on the people and artists that we've spoken to who are dealing with those sorts of issues, they hear about Web3 and it seems too good to be true. So it's amazing that you guys are spearheading that. It's, yeah, incredible.
We try, man.
I think it's inspiring because like you said, if you know, you know, right? And we've spoken to many artists who are just like, bro, like, is this, why do I need to be Justin Bieber to even like put food on my table, right? And then you guys are out here, you've been in it just over a year, right? You don't need to be an expert. You can just start minting stuff on chain, really start, and then leaning into that cultivation of community. Have you found that transition? And whilst you're still maintaining an engineering and production kind of role, have you found that transition daunting? And what were some of the challenges that you experienced when you started to do this?
I think it definitely was challenging. Like I said, I'm still learning every day, but the transition was also exciting. Like you said, I've minted one song on the blockchain on OpenSea. It's a song called Curve, still available to this day. I think there's only about 8 owners. I think the most challenging thing is, how can I get the most exposure? How can I get people to care about me, especially in this new space? And how can I deliver the most top quality content to make people give a damn, basically? I think that's still what I'm thinking about to this day, and still what I'm thinking about when I think about my community, how I'm gonna give back, how we're gonna make this larger, and eventually, you know, get to releasing some amazing content. That's the biggest challenge for me, yeah.
Dope. So you mentioned that you've got a track on OpenSea and you sold 8. And a lot of artists, they say to us, you know, we're scared of not selling out, or, you know, we want it to be perfect and we want to get on there and make sure that we crush it. But our perspective is a little different. We're kind of like, look, like, you know, just start to upload, start to learn, right? Once you start to do that, your journey into it. And you, as you said, you've been in for a year and you're still learning every day. The way we see it is like, it's another tier of marketing that you can employ as an artist or a builder or a business owner or what have you. Do you have any sort of thoughts on that in sort of respect to, you know, how the attitude that builders and creators should have towards the NFT space?
My personal opinion is I definitely agree with you. I think diving in head first is better than sitting back and waiting. I think this space is so new and exciting, and people think that they don't have access to it. But I think in a couple of years' time, I think it's going to be flooded. There's going to be too many people in the space to really, it's going to be so oversaturated to the point where people aren't going to know what's good, where to go. I feel like now with my song Curve, I promise you, we did zero marketing. So for anyone listening out there, if you're like, oh, I don't want to sell nothing, I'm not sure if people will like it, we did no marketing. The fact that we were so early in the space, took a good photo, you know, gave a good description, posted on all our social medias, just did the bare minimum for it. And we were able to sell a few. And we didn't sell that many, but for me, like, your first few drops, it shouldn't be about that. It's about exploring the space, finding out who your fans are, finding out who likes you, what people don't like. Did you want to add anything to that, Daniel?
Yeah. So I have like 2 points to make. The first one is that we were talking about it earlier about like SoundCloud and back in the good days, like 2015, 2016. I can guarantee you, like, that was still when SoundCloud was coming up, but SoundCloud really blew up the Lil Pumps and the Smoke Perps, and there was literally a term that people used to call them, which was SoundCloud rappers, right?
Yeah.
So if anyone could be if I said to an artist now, you can be a part of that, we just need to go back in time real quick and we'll do some stuff together, they would absolutely jump at it, right? And it was because it was so early. But in that time, because SoundCloud was still coming up and because people still didn't really know how to play with it, they were like, I'm a bit hesitant right now. And it was those who kind of went headfirst and really jumped into it were the ones who succeeded and benefited from it. And then the other point that I want to make too is that artists are, when they say that they're a little bit hesitant to get into the Web3 space, it could also be that they're hesitant in that they might be giving up something they've already got. And I'm trying to preach this. Web3 is not an have to be here. It's an extra income stream. It's not a one or the other. It's a both. You don't have to give up one. It's like if you said to an artist, oh, you've got a great user base on Spotify, let's try Apple Music. It's not like they're going to be like, oh, no, I don't know if I want to jump into Apple Music just yet. It's like, yeah, it's Apple Music. Who cares? I'll just add it to my distribution. Same thing. It's the same thing. It's extra money. It's extra income. It's extra community. It's an extra source of, I don't know, life, wealth, career path, whatever you want to define it as.
Yeah.
So you're not giving up anything. You are just entering into something new and adding something onto your resume.
Absolutely. That's definitely something that we've been having discussions with the people we're talking to. It's a concern. It's like, oh, I want to get into Web3, but I still want to post on and stream out on Spotify. And it's like, well, it's not a one or the other. It's a supplement to everything that you're doing.
Yeah.
Jack, I just want to touch back on you just to give the audience a little bit of context as to who you are and what you do. Can you just give us a little bit about what you're up to?
For sure. All right, everybody. So my name is Jack McGraw. I've been writing and playing piano and guitar, writing music for over 5 years now, but only as a professional for
like 6 or 7.
I bet.
He's been writing since he was in like 14 in high school. We used to play Let It Be on the piano like in music class in year 9. So he's being modest, but he's been in this shit for ages. He's
committed to the craft.
Yeah.
So yeah, tell us more, man.
Shout out the Beatles. But I've been taking this very seriously probably for only the past couple years and only as a professional for the past year. So I first started just on Instagram or social media like anybody else, posting covers. I got my first recording equipment when I was like 14 or 15. I got a bit of traction on social media and immediately decided I wanted to be a musician. So in the late years of my high school life was me messaging A&Rs, producers, writers, let me work for you for free. I'll do anything you want. I'll give you beats. I'll give you this. I'll write songs for you. Anything they wanted, I would do. So that basically allowed me to build relationships and make connections with people, and it made me able to show people in a higher up in the food chain that I had something of value to provide them as well. So then over time, it became me the person of value, and that is the way that I was able to transition from part-time musician into full-time musician, because my most notable credit would have to be the song Anything by a kid named Jules. It's on YouTube right now, and it's featuring an R&B singer called Eric Bellinger. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's quite prestigious. He's written a lot of Usher songs, a lot of Chris Brown songs. And the way that I got that was sending out millions of thousands of beats just to my A&R, the producers that I had been working with. I probably sent out, honestly, damn near 100 beats before they even ever started talking to me. But by the time they got back to me, I landed a placement with Eric Bellinger. Was able to get nice little legacy placement off that. And ever since then, I've just been building local clients, adding value to my name and showing people that I can really help them write their songs. So to this day, that's my day job. I wake up, I consult people, I help people write their music. If you're in my city, Brisbane, Jack McGraw at Jack McGraw, JACKMEGRAW. I'm the only man you need to be coming to make your music. All right, straight up. But that's where I'm at now. Thank you guys.
And Jackspace, jackspace.com. Is that right? That's your
Jackspace.com. Shill that too. Jackspace OG.
Get that out there. That's a true message of conviction and passion in your craft. Because that's no easy overnight success, right? That's you sticking it day by day, knowing and having conviction in your passion and being like, I don't give a damn if you don't reply to me. I'm going to keep sending you beats. I'm going to keep putting stuff out there.
Yeah.
And ultimately, then what, you get a leg up by like execs and get a leg up by producers who recognize your work, and then you're like, cool, like I can stand on my own 2 feet, and then you're like, all right, I'm gonna keep building up momentum, I'm gonna keep building up speed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you, when you caught wind of like Web3 and kind of the NFT music space, how did you guys kind of connect over that? And then were you like, okay, cool, this transition makes sense to me, I'm just gonna now pivot and then keep putting stuff out in this space?
Yep. So obviously Daniel has been in the crypto NFT space for a hot minute now. He was probably in that space for, I want to say, a solid 3 years, 2-3 years before I was even ever interested or wanted to be a part of it. At that point, I think my main concern was, you know, getting placements, increasing my own value so that I could get my own clients. The biggest thing for me, the turning point would have been, you know, last year around when I said I got into it, was the royalties that I got in the legacy world was just not it. I started to realize that even if I was getting placements, writing placements or beat placements with artists of value, the turnaround was just simply, I just felt like I was not getting, you know, what I'm worth. Mm. Especially, like, I won't go too far into it, but I've had examples when I've solo produced a track and it's involving a record label. I won't say which record label, but they've been in a meeting with the artist to discuss splits of the songs. And because they're in America, they tried to not give me splits at all. They tried to cut me out just simply because I was not in the room. So as far as they were concerned, it's like, who is this guy? Even though there's not even any other producer on the song. But anyways, I diverse. So what really attracted me was the fact that in Web3, Daniel said it to me, you can release music, you can write music, you can do everything you're doing in legacy music, but everything that you own, you receive for. You know what I mean? You get credit for. It's on-chain. There's data encryption saying, this is yours, this is yours. You made this, this is your cut.
Mm.
And it's in there forever. You can't get around that. And I think that's so attractive to anyone who's solely working in legacy music.
100%. And, you know, you've also got the royalties in perpetuity, which is another amazing feature of working with NFTs. But another issue that we keep hearing about working with, you know, legacy music brands and streaming channels is that the turnaround time to actually getting paid, let's say you actually do get a split and it's that 0.03 cents per stream or whatever the numbers are, it can take up to 6 to 9 months for that money to even hit your account. And so, I mean, one of the beautiful things about blockchain is that everything's automated and transparent.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you. And especially if you're in my specific position, which is the writer, a producer / beat maker, or it's even worse for audio engineers, I believe, but you won't get your payout. Like, you're pretty much the last person to get the payout. The artist will get their payout last. It'll be all the record label, it'll be the managers, it'll be marketers, anyone involved on that side of things. And if you're a little old Jack sitting in Brisbane, Australia, who's produced this record solely, they'll get to you last. And at, like you said, that can be 6 to 9 months, up to even a year before you're even seeing anything.
Did you have some, and when you were like, who are hearing about these problems, were you like, okay, because you were in MotorDAO, you had another platform, Emanate, that you were working on as well. And was this like the conviction, the problems that you were like, I need to get onto this. This is inspiring me to start taking some action. And just to add on to that question, how do you envision, because it's all about consumption of the music, right? How are people going to be engaging with your music, consuming it? Do you think streaming platforms moving into Web3 are going to face challenges on kind of visibility? And platforms like MotorDAO, Emanate, and projects like Jack Space, like your guys' co-founder project, do you think these are critical platforms that go beyond OpenSea, LooksRare, Magic Eden? We need to really kind of focus on getting artists on their own page and get off these kind of flipping and speculative platforms. It was quite a multi-layered question there.
Yeah, no, so you're cool, man. So, I actually was part of the launch team from MotorDAO. So I got into MotorDAO like last year in May, and we launched in November, December. So I was part of that whole journey. But I was managing Jack since high school. So we left high school in 2017, started to do the management process. And through this process that Jack was going through this legacy stuff, I've always had a massive passion for music. And obviously, this is my best bud. I'm like, I hate people being able to just, can we swear?
Yeah.
I hate people just being able to just fuck them over pretty much.
Yeah.
So I just kind of like, you know, to short story long, when I was working in traditional finance, I was like, nah, I'm not interested in this. I am really interested in finance as a whole. I'm interested in crypto. I'm going to start getting into it. I also love music. I know I love music. I'm going to try and mix the both of them. And that kind of turned into finding the founder of MonaDAO, which is Sean Gardner. I just kind of talked him into hiring me on accident through Telegram. Yeah. I was just the internet boy from Brisbane. I don't know why he hired me. And the rest is history. So from there, when I started really getting heavily into MonaDAO, the veil kind of lifts off when you start to realize the potential and what you can bring to the table for your artist. And so I was like to Jack, I was like, we need to kind of get to the forefront of this. The NFT space is pretty new and it's blowing up. Like JPEGs are blowing up right now, but music NFTs are not quite there just yet, because one of the biggest questions everyone asks themselves is, why would I buy the music NFT when I can stream music, you know, for $13 a month and get access to pretty much all the music on the planet? It's a good question. But what I kind of say back to that, and it's becoming proven more and more now, is that people want to collect music. They want to purchase music. Harry Styles sold his recent album. 52% of the sales were vinyl. Wasn't even streaming. The majority of his sales were vinyl. And then Kanye West released Donda 2 only as some sort of streamable device you had to purchase. It's not streamed anywhere. And that thing sold out, and he made like $4 million for himself that no one else can touch. So the power of what musicians can achieve in this space, and knowing that the fans do want to support them, I think the argument for why should I just get streaming, it's the same argument as I'll just right click and save your JPEG. Like it's a null argument in my mind now. And it's just a matter of time before people really start to understand what's happening, and that I need to be a part of this space.
Yeah, there's just one thing I wanted to add, and that's also like, it also comes back down to, if you love an artist, if they're your favorite artist, as a fan, wouldn't you want to do everything in your power to support them the best way you can? Mm. And if you knowingly, and I get that accessibility, it's easy to just download Spotify and, like you said, pay $13 a month. None of that is going towards the artist that you love. Mm. So I think if we can commercialize the Web3 space and figure out a way to be like, hey, this is the artist you love, this is the best way to support them, they're going to love you back and be able to engage with you more if you involve it this way.
And then your evangelist fans have the opportunity to profit from your upside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's amazing.
They can literally follow you. It's like, how many times have you heard an artist on SoundCloud or like hiphop.com, like whatever, and then you're like, bro, I wish I could invest in this artist like a stock, right? Yeah. You're like, you were the first, like how many like absolutely hipsters, like, oh, I knew them before they were cool.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then it's like, well, now you can own them before they were cool. And not as to mean own them as in like you're owning them, but you can actually invest in them and contribute to their upside so they can create more value, create more of the stuff that you love.
Yeah.
And then you have exposure to them all the way from their bedroom producing music all the way to Kudos Arena.
Yeah.
Right. And then you have the opportunity to say, hey, like, I see you there. Thank you for supporting me. Thank you for being involved. Thank you for giving me feedback and talking to me. I want you to be there with me.
Yeah.
I want you to be there in the front row. Like, I'm guaranteeing you tickets, right? How many times, like, you know, when you heard of Kanye, like years and years ago, right? Now you can't, there's no way you could get to his gigs. There's no way. Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
There's no way it could happen, right? And this technology, I mean, does that inspire you as well? Like, as you're like producing music and as you're like, all right, cool. Like, I'm working out how I can start to leverage this platform and leverage this tech and really get connected. I'm like, I want to make this happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Also, running back to kind of what you were saying before, now that everything in legacy music, all these other platforms, the algorithm is so changed, rarely you can run into artists that you really connect to straight off the bat. I feel like, yeah, one of the exciting things is in this new platform, finding people who really love you the most and connecting to fans that like you on a deeper level. I feel like your community is going to grow so much larger because you're going to find so many more fans that want to listen to you and you only, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Put you as a priority. Whereas on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever, you're just running through playlists, algorithm playlists that half the labels are running anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like it just creates that intimacy. And that's one thing that gets me exciting, the intimacy between me and another person I get to connect my music with.
it comes back to that 1,000 fans theory.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you've got 1,000 true fans and they're paying you $10 a month, that's 10 grand a month. That's plenty of cash to live off and do your art and interact with your fans and stuff. You don't need the hundreds of thousands of streams per month. You don't need the millions of fans adoring you. Just 1,000 people who you know are down to pay $10 a month, bro, that's powerful.
Touching on that, because I think that that's such a good point. Are you finding that NFTs are providing musicians and artists with the ability to have a middle-class wage so that they can continue to do what they love without having to become a Justin Bieber or, you know, the top 0.01% of artists on the planet?
What's interesting about that question, this might get a little bit deep, but I think not yet. I think right now the space is still early and we're still trying to figure out how best to proceed on that, mostly from like a tech level. It's from a deep tech level. It's like, people don't know if Solana's going to be the next one. People don't know if they want the community on Solana. People don't know if Polygon's going to fall over tomorrow. People are concerned about ETH and the gas prices. Avalanche is cumbersome and kind of shit to use. Cardano, who the fuck uses Cardano? So it's kind of like, I think we're still just trying to figure that process out. But the fact that NFTs can do what they can do, we can upload MP3 files to blockchain, and at Moda, we've been building a technology that pretty much helps with on-chain copyright infringement. You can do this without people copying your music. There's a prevalent company that when they first launched, it was their first blockchain streaming platform that you could kind of get access to. Me and Jack used to kind of work on the platform too until we figured out what was happening. Essentially, what you could do is I could say I'm Justin Bieber and I could upload a track that is Justin Bieber's track and make a couple hundred thousand in their native token, take the token out, swap it over on a market, make some money and run away kind of thing. So there was no, absolutely zero copyright enforcement on the platform. There was nothing that they could do to protect it. And very slowly over time, they've just been kind of going downhill. Recently, there was a bit of a hack on the platform too, where someone drained about $6 million worth of funds, swapped the funds on a exchange, and they only made $1 million off it because they put the slippage to like 90% or something like that. The experience initially was kind of just not that great. I can't remember what we're talking about, but I think what I was coming to is that at Moda, we're trying to essentially stop that from happening now.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? So Moda is actually working on multiple problems on multiple fronts, including micro licensing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could we just explore that and how you're doing it and how you guys are tackling that?
Yeah, we can kind of dive deep. So one of our products that we just released is the audio fingerprinting tool.
Sorry, guys, we are talking about Moda DAO as well. Moda just DAO, letting you know, yeah. Moda DAO. So you go check it out.
Moda DAO, M-O-D-A DAO.
Yeah.
So the audio fingerprinting tool, what it does is, as an artist, you can upload a ton of data, pretty much. You can upload the BPM, the length of the song, the key that the song's in.
It's like Record Box.
Right, yeah. But what we really do is we kind of break the song down into its like individual data points. We plot those data points on chain, and then we can kind of release that as a data reference for the track that you've just uploaded to chain. Now, the amazing thing about this is if Jack uploads a track and he uploads curves to the chain and we do the audio fingerprinting on it and we do all that kind of data stuff, and then me, I'm like, oh, I'm Jack as well. This song's making a lot of money. I'm going to make some money off it. And I upload a version of Curve. What will happen is the audio fingerprint will actually recognize that there's too many similarities in the data between my song and Jack's. Because obviously we've taken the key, we've taken the BPM, we've taken everything that the song is composed of and made up of. And it will essentially say, no, you can't upload it. Because we know that this song already exists. You're essentially trying to infringe on somebody's copyright. And now we can't do it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So we worked with a guy called, I can't remember his full name, I'm sorry, but the first name's Matt. He worked with Audio Dolby Australia for a while. He's a co-founder of his own company called Step In CTO. Super, super smart guy. And he pretty much built the algorithm for us that creates that audio fingerprint on chain. And then what we've also done is we've got some really creative data scientists, and they've built out like a visualizer. So it's like when we were in Moda hosted a party at Mirage in New York City. And on the big screen behind us, we had the visualizer going off. And pretty much it looks like a little planet, essentially, with like different colors and stuff. And the planet will move in real time based on the music that's being played, because it's pretty much just plotting out the data points. So, yeah. So it's not like just like a visualizer that syncs up. It's a visualizer that visualizes the data that's on chain.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's incredible. And that just tackles another major problem artists might have that prevent them coming onto the blockchain is, I don't want to lose my music because I don't want someone to replicate it.
Right. Exactly right. So it's a copyright infringement piece. It's like we're making sure we're bringing fair ownership rights to artists, and we're just trying to protect them.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. Motor DAO. Look at these guys. Look at these guys. Jackspace as well. Did you do the same thing with your music? And shout out Curve. Curve is on the blockchain. Can we get that at Jackspace and OpenSea?
Absolutely.
Hell yeah. Check that out. We'll link it in the bio, guys.
Speaking about upcoming projects, though, my next exciting thing that I have coming up in Web3 is I'm going to be releasing another single called Brain. It's an R&B banger as my Genesis audio NFT through Motor's new fingerprint tool. So I'm really excited for this because, especially as someone as proud as I am, and I'm sure there's a million other people out there, artists like me, who sit in their room and make all their beats, make everything, write everything, don't steal anything from anybody. It's just going to give you so much more protection. And I'm so excited for that. Yeah. And also another point as well as like sampling, like as far as taking other people's music, you know, you're going to have to get things cleared. Everything is going to be so protected. I just feel like it all comes back down to the power of the artist. But to diverge from that, Brain coming out soon, audio NFT.
Can we get a date? Do we know when? Or is it still? No, it's under wraps. Under wraps. Yeah, okay.
It's definitely still under wraps.
We're gonna get that out after the podcast. Yeah. All right. Yeah, 100%. We're gonna be on that allow list.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's amazing. All right, looking forward to Brain and Curve still on the blockchain. Grab that.
Appreciate.
That's a really good point you raise about sampling, right? I know, like, I don't want to take a pessimistic approach, but the fundamental thing I'm always hearing in the music industry is everything is just sampled from something else in the past, right? Which is great because we love to build on what our past has kind of put out, yeah, and to create something new. But when it comes to blockchain and actually taking ownership of samples, are there any platforms now that are able to distribute samples and that is kind of being integrated into new production of music?
I would say no.
No, okay.
No one's really doing it just yet. Like, really prevalent music platforms on chain right now. You could think of like SoundXYZ and Catalog and Mint Songs and stuff like that.
Can we just explore how wild these platforms are and how accessible they are? And also, you guys mucked around with Beat Foundry?
No.
Have you heard of Beat Foundry?
I haven't heard of Beat Foundry.
Algorithmically created music that takes the inputs.
That's interesting.
And spit something else out.
That's cool.
And I haven't actually spoken to anyone who's used it, but I was thought, how does that work? And I mean, if you guys haven't heard of it, it might not be that popular yet. But again, like, could you tell us a little bit about the other platforms that are available now for musicians to get their music out?
Yeah, like SoundXYZ and Mint Songs and Catalog are the first three that come to mind. You've got other platforms like Royal, but obviously Royal is quite exclusive to, you have to be Nas. You have to be someone quite big to be able to get onto Royal. So same kind of walled gardens, plutocratic bullshit. I think someone did like some sort of calculation because obviously the way that Royal works is it's like it's peer-to-peer financing. So it's like if I come into it and I'll pay for Nas's record, I get a royalty split from Nas's record. I think someone worked out the math that it was going to take them like something like 50 years to make back their actual initial investment on the royalties. So it's just not that valuable. I could be wrong. It could be like, I know that it's like some ridiculous amount of time. I just used 50 as like a word, but yeah, there's definitely statistics out there that it says it's not worth an investment right now.
I saw the thread.
Yeah.
I saw the thread on, I think Timmy Trumpet released his song. Yeah. 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 And then, it dialed back to like, look, you're not buying this to get a return.
No.
It's like, hello speculators. Like, we're not getting a return out of this.
No, I don't know. I think that's antithesis to Web3. We're not supposed to be building that anymore. It feels very much like a Web2 company trying to get into Web3. I don't know if that's necessarily very organic or grassroots.
It's a good point on sort of the speculation and whether you'll be seeing a return or not. I kind of see music NFTs like buying a record, as you were alluding to earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, you're buying a memento, you're buying a piece of this artist in that piece of time, in that time frame.
Which and meant a lot to you at that particular
exactly,
time.
Exactly, which is a timestamp in your life. And, you know, if you want to sell that on down the track, you can. If you want to collect them and get extra utility and incentive, you can. It's just, it's different. It's not about making money on that. And I think that that's a beautiful thing.
And what's interesting about that, though, is that, again, foregoing the speculation and potentially making some sort of reward on it, what I think will be a true mark of an artist in Web3 is how good do they get at utility? So it's like, I'm an artist, I'm selling you a music NFT. What else can I give you? What utility can I include as part of this music NFT that's not some sort of dividend? The problem with dividends, of course, is like you start to think about potentially classifying it as security, and you got the SEC breathing down your ass. You don't want that. So it's like, what can I give to my fans? Can I give them merch drops exclusively? Can I give them concert tickets? Can I go and sing at their wedding? Like, what will start to become really cool is people may start to invest in music NFTs, one, for the love of the music, but also because this artist is going to give me something so special that I need to put my money into this.
Absolutely.
This is amazing.
At the end of every gig, rave, concert, how, like, the merch stands are flooded with people and they're sold out, right? And then you're like, I'm not actually getting the size I want. I'm getting some like large one or extra small one.
Yep.
With this kind of technology, like, cool, like, I know that I'm getting it.
Yep.
Which leads me to back to Jackspace. You guys are doing something really interesting with utility. I thought it was a really beautiful concept. And to add to that, you've also got extending to merch and exclusive drops, early listening opportunities. These are just the start of what you can really do with this utility.
Opportunities are endless, and I think that's so beautiful. And just like what you were saying is, you can make that connection so much more unique, because it doesn't have to be you standing in a 30-minute line at some concert where you get some jumper that's not even your size. It could be something as personal as, like you said, you singing at their wedding, or, you know, show up to their house on a date that's planned. Like, I think that's just so exciting, and I think that's just something that's not very available anywhere else right now.
How many young, we've been talking about with some musicians we've been working with, is how many young producers or old producers, anyone, how many producers, sound engineers who are like, I love this, but I don't know where to start, right? And to have someone that they could like refer to or like talk to and just be like, hey, like, look, I'm mucking around with this track. I don't really know where to go. My stems are all over the place, right? You can start to kind of offer that. You're like, hey, like, this is my library, this is my catalog. Like, I'm speaking on behalf of you. You produced majority of everything yourself in your entire catalog. You have a demonstrated history since you were a kid, just from today back. Since you were a kid to today, producing everything for yourself. That is an invaluable resource for people who like are just getting started, who would like hear your sound and they just want to get into that. Is this just more opportunity that you can just kind of add over time? And in doing so, do you find that this is where this kind of creator economy can kind of emerge?
Mm.
Sorry, that wasn't really a question, but I was just like, a really cool, I was like, that's fucking cool.
I'm following. Yeah. Bro, absolutely, yeah.
I can answer that. Do you want to answer it?
Absolutely, go hard.
Okay. I'm just like, yeah, so I guess to talk about that, when you're thinking about like actually, to be honest, you saying that an artist could give somebody an advice as part of their base, it's really clever. I hadn't thought of that before, but that's absolutely a utility. Like someone being a part of a base and not understanding how to be a part of the music industry could really benefit from a base.
There's a complete gap between record labels and their assistance to artists because they're removed. One is the business and one is viewed as an expendable asset, right? And so, and like, I'm kind of not speaking from my personal experience, but I was with an artist at a networking event for a major label. And there was such a disconnect on what the artists were needing and what the label was saying you should do.
Yeah.
Right. And I thought, like, you know, like, I'm not trying to say NFTs solve everything, right? But it literally gives you the opportunity to connect directly with your peers.
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't have to be like hundreds or thousands of dollars.
No.
I mean, we've got masterclass.com for crying out loud. Like, you know, and there's like Udemy or whatever. These are all like transactional things. It's like, I buy this, I learn this, but where's the mentorship? Where's the guidance? Where's the engagement? People don't learn by just reading something off a book.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. No, and like, I mean, to talk about the hundreds of thousands of dollars thing, our OG membership, Genesis NFTs, when we release Jackspace and properly launch to the community,
Jackspace.com,
they're going to be worth like 35 Matic. So it's such a small amount, because we're not trying to make it inaccessible to people. We're actually going to give the NFTs away for free. The problem, though, is that I think there are too many like grifters and scalpers in this space who are just going to take a free mint and then sell it on the market as soon as they can.
Yeah.
So it literally acts as a quality barrier. It's like, if you actually want to be involved, you pay a little bit amount of money, but that's your NFT for the rest of time, and you're going to have access to the base for the rest of time.
100%.
And then in terms of the base and like utility and stuff, one of the big things is, it's not just the merch, it's not just the exclusive drops, it's not just the listening. It's the fact that we will incentivize fans to bring us opportunities. So the thesis is turning your fans into your support network.
Yeah.
And what that means is, instead of you, think of it like an artist going B2B, because artists, it's a business-to-business thing. It's like, if you're an artist, and you want to talk to a label, you need to sign a contract, blah, 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 blah. You're signing your life away. You don't know what you're signing, but you've got $1 million. Who cares? It's a problem.
So what we want to do is we want to say, okay, maybe instead of having four people on your team in your ear, who's like your manager, or, and I'm technically cutting myself out of the picture because I am his manager, but it's like, you know, your manager, your A&R, your publicist, whatever. It's like you leverage your thousands of people in your community to bring you those opportunities.
Yeah.
You may have someone in your fans who knows someone at Warner Brothers, or maybe someone in your fans knows Jimmy Iovine, for example, you know?
Yeah.
Then what'll happen is you can say to your fan, hey, look, if you can get me a publishing deal, I'll pay you a chunk of that publishing deal. You get your cut because you brought me that opportunity. And now what happens is it pivots. Instead of the label coming to the artist and the label acting as the hub with the artist jumping off as spokes, it's the artist who has the value. They get to go to the label. They say, oh, this person's referred me through to you guys. They've said you're going to give me a publishing deal. I'd like this much for my publishing deal. I'd like this much for my guy. I'd like my rights forever. You know what I mean? So it puts the power firmly back in the artist's hands, and that's the whole thesis behind how a bass may function into the future.
You touched on some incredible points there, and one in particular is this doesn't actually have to mean people are losing jobs. There's no need for managers. There's no need for labels. The relationship is just going to inverse, bruh.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And it's like, hey, like, you, like, Jack, like, obviously you are so skilled in what you do, right? But to get into Web3 and to start to navigate their network, you needed help.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And those people are still going to be needed, right?
Yeah.
But now you've got the opportunity to be like, no, like, I know how this works, right? Can you help me get from A to B? And that's what part of the beautiful part of this emerging Web3 industry is. People are so willing to collaborate and build on these relationships. Do you think there is space for labels in the future? And how do you think that this relationship will kind of change? Because I think we know that a lot of the deals that labels were cutting, like, for a while were based on hard copy distribution, networks, gigs and stuff like that, festivals. But now we're moving into this, like we've kind of been touching on, is algorithms, and artists are really kind of getting popular through things like TikTok.
Yep.
Where do you think labels will start to see themselves in the future?
It's a really difficult one, especially for me to say. I really view labels as giant bank loans these days.
Yep.
So for me, I feel like they're the massive machine and they're the massive cogs in the machine, and they come to an artist and they say, hey, like Daniel said, we'll give you $1 million, but you owe us all that back.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, we own you for life, but we'll give you publishing, we'll give you marketability, we'll give you commercialism. So I don't know if I can really answer that, because I'm so focused on what I'm doing as an individual and as an independent artist in the Web3 space. It's a great question, by the way.
I think it's an inverse, bro. And I think it could be utopic. It could be way too utopic. But I think right now, artists are bleeding at the knees to work with labels and to make ends meet and to get signed and to get, you know, to blow up potentially. And it's almost like the artists are working for the labels, and the labels are just like, sure, we'll take you on, whatever. Labels will have to start working for artists. Labels will have to be like, God damn it, I need this person. How do I get this person involved? Is there someone in the community that I can talk to get this artist? Because if you're an artist and you're making your $100,000 a year, for most people, that's enough. You don't need the millions and millions of dollars. You don't need the adoration. You've got your community, you've got your art, you've got your music, you're comfortable, you're making money, good.
Exactly.
What value does a label then bring to you? Mm-hmm. You know, other than a loan with not 10% interest, 50% interest, 100% interest. You don't get lent $1 million and then it's like a, you know, you pay it back over time. You're not clear of that label until you pay back that $1 million. So yeah, I think it's going to be that labels will have to work for the artists now. And I hope that's where it goes.
Something that's exciting for me, just sort of getting into this space and learning about all these trials and tribulations that artists have with record labels, is the fact that through NFTs, firstly, yes, they can fund themselves. Secondly, yes, their fans become their team. But thirdly, they get to retain their IP.
Yeah.
And they get to retain their creative freedom. And I think that that is just so valuable for artists. You know, you're seeing a lot of artists come out and they've actually lost that aspiration to become that, you know, sort of top of the pops 1%.
Yeah.
Because they want to stay true to their sound and their music and what they love. And as you said, it's probably not the time right now for artists to be going out and potentially making that middle class income and sustaining themselves fully
on
NFTs. But I do think that it's an amazing time to get in and get started and get acquainted with the space, because once the tech catches up, which it will, they're going to be in for a whole lot of opportunity.
Dude, I mean, I right now is like as in right this today, it's an incredible time because the market is bearish.
Yeah.
People are so worried about the market being bearish and not being interested in it. My thing is, I paid a couple of dollars for my transaction on Ethereum the other day.
Yeah.
A
like 6 to 8 months ago, I was paying hundreds of dollars for my Ethereum transaction. I used to measure up how much, like if I spent like, you know, $100 at dinner, I'd be like, yeah, I spent more on transactions. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it was like, I used to measure how much I spent as whether or not it was expensive based on how much I just spent in gas fees. So right now, to be able to get into the space as of this moment, to be able to set up your footprint, set up your profile, say, plant your flag and say, I'm here, is so cheap. And I just try to implore as many people as I can to just do it. Jump in.
Just get your music onto the blockchain. Yeah. Just get your work on there.
Absolutely.
I love it. I think that's a critical message we keep reiterating. Is just start to lean into that, lean into cultivating your community, do the hard thing and just get it out there.
Yeah.
So it kind of leads me to my next question, because I just jumped into you and your personal profile and you raised something really interesting about the bear market and people that are stressed in a bear market and not to label, but potentially have a valueless proposition if they're mostly relying on a green market to give them value.
Right.
Right. And then, so being in a bear market, you actually have the opportunity to create a more valuable version of you and really start to add to those layers that really make you a valuable human and someone that can give value back to the world.
Yeah.
What have you experienced in being a value-adding person and people? And what do you think is your North Star and what keeps you going through this kind of bear market?
Oh, that's a good question. It's a just a deep love for what I'm doing. And it's also a 100% conviction in knowing that this is the future.
Yep.
This is where I'm going. I think for me, it really began when because I'm working in traditional finance, there's so many pitfalls in traditional finance at the moment. I have a dislike toward banks. I don't have my money in banks anymore. I stick all my money in Ethereum or Bitcoin or USDC. I kind of steer away from it as much as I can. I've still got a car and I use a transaction account. I'm not a hippie. But I just don't like banks. And it's because I worked in it. It's because I work behind the scenes and I understand how banks function and how they work. So knowing that and then being exposed to something like Ethereum or Bitcoin and understanding how that works instead is just... it's just so much more valuable. Like a really great real world example is the US have just declared that they're officially in a recession. Australia's inflation rate is 6.1%. People don't know what that means. It means that if you have money that was worth $100 at the start of this year, at the end of this year, your money is worth $94 because literally your buying power has decreased as a result of your money sitting in a bank. That's what's terrifying about using normal currency and normal banking and stuff like that. And so the future of finance for me really is in crypto. And that's my conviction. It's like I get up and I know that what I'm doing is the future. This is where things are going. Even though times are a bit tough right now in the bearish market, I'm not really worried about it. Kind of just put my head down and work.
It's an interesting point that you make. But to the people at home that probably aren't as native to crypto as you are, when they look at the price of Ethereum, because you're talking about, you know, losing 6% to your dollar. When you look at the price of Ethereum and it was worth 6,000 Australian dollars, you know, a few months ago, and now it's worth 2,500. You're talking about fluctuations. How would you speak to that when you're talking to people on the street that don't understand what crypto is and how it works?
Well, the way that I say with Ethereum might not be the best example, mostly because Ethereum is more like utility. It's more like a software that applications are built on. A massive Ethereum maxi, I'll be the first one to say it, and I love Ethereum, so I don't mind if it drops 50%, I don't really give a shit. I'm also think of it more like, if you look at Bitcoin's probably a better example. Your one Bitcoin at the start of the year has the same buying power at the end of the year, regardless of the fluctuation in the value of the Bitcoin, right? I have one Bitcoin in January, and I have one Bitcoin in December. It's still one Bitcoin. It wasn't eroded by the inflation rate that Australia has, or it wasn't eroded by the inflation rate in America. It's still one Bitcoin. Of course, there is fluctuation and volatility in value, but anyone with two brain cells can see that the value is doing this. It might be fluctuating, but the trend is still up. We got to think about the fact that Bitcoin was worth, what, $100 a few years ago? Or like, you know, $1,000 a few years ago? Ethereum was worth $100 a few years ago? The trend is up. Even if I was actually looking at charts today from Ethereum and we're down right now, it's, I'm sitting at like $1,700. Yeah. Well, nice little cheeky pump, but, like it's at $1,700. But if you look back in 2020, it was worth $600. So it's still bullish. The trend is still up regardless of these intermediate fluctuations. So I kind of like refer to it like that. It's like, it's the buying power. If you think about like housing and stuff like that too. The housing market is kind of booming. I have a weird suspicion that the housing market is going to collapse, and that's a result of banks and, you know, inflation and whatnot. So really, if I was going to say anything to anybody, it's like it's your buying power does not change based on anything except a little bit of code.
I want to shift gears.
Before we shift gears, I'd love to hear about...
I'm shifting gears.
No, I'm going back to fifth. I'd love to hear about your North Star, Jack, and what keeps your conviction during this bear market. I know that you've been grinding for a long time now, and I imagine that it's well ingrained in you. But, I mean, as all of us, we experience the highs and the lows of any market, and you guys are still building. So I'd just love to explore that a little.
Absolutely, man. I think the thing driving me most is just coming back to the whole power of the artist thing. I think for me, I've been through some terrible situations in legacy music. I've been on just emailing people for weeks, months. I've been cut out of deals many a times, too many times that I would care to admit. Pretty similar to what Daniel said, you know what I mean? I think this is the future. I think this is giving the most power to artists. And yeah, I still feel like I was able to connect to a certain few people. I still had messages coming to my legacy music accounts, like in Instagram, Twitter, and stuff like that, and I was able to connect. I think just a strong conviction for what I'm doing, for where it's headed. And I mean, if you look at anything, even like stock market or, you know, coins, things have to dip before they go hard. You know what I mean? So I think it's just having the confidence in myself to see where I'm going, and the conviction in myself to know that this is the right thing to do. And really just the hope that people will love me and really see that I really have something amazing to offer. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
You definitely do, bro. I love it. Love the conviction. It's amazing.
Love the energy and the passion. It's infectious.
It definitely is. I want to talk about you two guys. Cheers, bro. Cheers. 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 I want to talk about the fact that you two guys are childhood friends. I love that. You guys get together, you've known each other for years, you start helping Jack with his music, you get to the blockchain. What was the reaction that your fans and followers had, and how did you guys sort of collectively tackle that?
So I think it was definitely an initial challenge, and still is to this day. I'm not going to sit here and lie. It's still really hard to commercialize and bring people who, especially people who have been following me for a certain amount of time, for a really long time, maybe even since I first started putting content out on social media. It's really hard to convert people or give people a reason why they should move along. But I think it all just comes back to, if I can communicate to why this is so much better for me, if my fans at the end of the day, if they care about me, I know that they'll do whatever they can to support me. So like I said, still struggle with it, and I'm working on new ways to promote and do it every day. But I think really, if I can show people that this is helping me and this means the most to me, then we're going to be good. Yeah, we're going to be Gucci. Yeah.
I love that. I want to dive in just a touch deeper. Do you have any sort of tips that you, like practical tips that you can give to artists that are struggling with this sort of communication of shifting from Web 2 to Web 3?
Yeah. Something really simple. My biggest advice to getting, you know, your legacy music audience to transition over into Web 3 is, don't overcomplicate things. Don't focus on all the little details on chain, all the boring stuff. Remember that they're your audience because they're a fan of you. So you need to think about what provides value to them as well as you, and promote it. So for example, my song Curve on OpenSea, we minted on Polygon because there's no gas fees. So that's something that an audience member would love. So I focused on that and promoted that for like a week straight, because that's something that provides them value and is good for me and provides a reason as to why they should come to here versus there.
Yeah, that's amazing advice. It's amazing advice. Just get out there, get started, get involved and engage them, and just keep it simple, and people will come around.
Absolutely, yeah. Simpler the better. Because you remember, at the end of the day, it's entertainment. Like, it's a new space and it's a new world. But if you're an artist, there's one thing that your audience wants from you, and that's content. That's music. They want to know who you are. So try to dumb it down as much as possible and think about
ways that you can commercialize yourself as to why this is the way to go and promote it.
That's incredible advice. And yeah, please, we'd love to explore with you, Daniel, as well. Do you have any advice for young professionals with big ideas, interested in startups, entrepreneurship? And what's your North Star? Like, I know I've asked that, but do you have any advice to kind of keep people track on their North Star?
I would say don't be afraid of failure. So we can be, I'll be philosophical and I'll also be pragmatic.
Okay,
so
yeah, we'd love it.
Philosophically.
Actionable.
Yeah, don't be afraid of failure because if I'm a testament to anything, I've failed so many times. I've fallen on my face so many goddamn times, metaphorically and probably physically too. It's like, if you're afraid of failure, then you're never going to get anywhere forward. You need to do things that you're scared of because otherwise you'll never move forward in your life. If you're not doing things that make your heart beat a little bit, you make you feel a little bit nauseous, then you're not going to evolve as a human being. And then I think pragmatically, download MetaMask. It's a fantastic wallet service. It's one of the best hot wallets out there. Get your seed phrase. Don't give your seed phrase to anybody. Don't connect your MetaMask to any dodgy sites. That's a problem. And find a chain or find a community that resonates with you. And when I say community, I mean chain. So Polygon has its own type of community. Solana has its own community. Ethereum has its own community. Avalanche has its own community. Find something that resonates with you ethically, morally, you know, in your heart that you feel like you want to go forward with and kind of work with it. Eventually, what's going to happen is a chain. The future will either be multi-chain or omni-chain. Either they're kind of synonymous, but slight differences in the, you know, in the logic. But eventually, what will happen is you'll kind of be across all chains more than likely. But I think find somewhere that resonates with you. If you're thinking, I want to reduce my fees as much as possible, I would recommend, you know, Polygon, Layer 2s, maybe Avalanche or Cardano, if you really want to. If you're interested in getting captured by high volume, loads of users, loads of, you know, massive maxis and degens, Ethereum all the way. I'm a maxi. If you're on Ethereum, I'll probably buy your stuff too. So that's what, pragmatic and philosophical advice.
Awesome. Awesome. And not to be, like you said, you both have said, just don't be afraid. Yeah. You know, it's just words and don't be afraid of the jargon. Just get in there, have a look around. There are many chains and you might have only really heard about Bitcoin or Ethereum, but there's many others with many diverse communities, people with different interests, whether it's gaming, whether it's music, whether it's art. I mean, you've got platforms for everything and everyone.
And no one gatekeeps in Web3 like they do in legacy music. There's always going to be people out there. They might not know everything, but there's always a question that can be answered by jumping in a Discord.
Yep.
Or like you said, jumping in a community, Discord. But Discord is amazing, man. Discord, you can jump in a community, ask every question about the space you've ever had in your life, and like 15 guys will reply different answers, and you can take what you want from it. And yeah, like I said at the start of the podcast, like I'm learning every day, you know what I mean? And that's a massive tool that I use to just understand certain language even.
Yeah. You know, when I first started like really getting into like blockchain back in 2019, I was reading white papers. I felt so stupid. I didn't understand anything I was reading. I would have to go over the same page a few times. And like white papers are chunky. These are like 30 page documents, 40 sometimes.
Yeah.
So I'm going through these pages. I'm going on Investopedia and I'm trying to, what does quorum mean? What does proof of stake mean? You know what I mean? Don't be afraid of doing that. It's really fun. It's a great journey. And you might come out of that journey knowing a whole lot more.
Well, you come out empowered.
Yeah.
Either or, really. This technology, this network, this community isn't going anywhere. And you know a little bit about it. I mean, next time you're at the pub and you're talking about staking, proof of stake and first proof of work, you're like, you know a little bit about that.
Right.
You know, it's not to be nothing to be afraid of. It's just jumping in. As we're wrapping up, guys, could you tell us a little bit about a day of the life in a DAO master and a Web3 artist? Do you guys have any morning dance routines, special coffee blends? Do you opt for a mental model that's more conducive for your success?
God, I don't drink coffee. That's one.
Awesome.
I just don't like caffeine. So I don't drink any, I drink lots of tea. So tea is really good for you.
What kind of tea?
I do like Earl Grey.
Oh, nice.
Earl Grey be bussin'.
One sugar?
Do like a little bit, just like
sweetener.
A teaspoon. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. 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 Or maybe a chai latte if I'm feeling really special.
I
love a chai latte.
Have you tried a turmeric latte?
Oh, dude, I love a matcha latte as well. Banging.
My man's here.
Yeah.
Get around the turmeric, bro.
Get around the turmeric.
Pepper. Happy days.
No, but dude, my routine is pretty normal. Day in the life of DAO master is pretty goddamn hectic. Working across two companies is insane. Because of the particular role that I'm in, I'm obviously working with multiple people always. I was talking to the guys. I was on Wednesday. I had like 11 meetings, and that's meetings starting at 9 a.m. and finishing at 12 a.m. So you're just going right through the whole day. I honestly wouldn't recommend it being a down master. Like 15, 16 hour days are very regular. And it's super busy, but it's super rewarding. I love it. I love working with the people that I work with. I love doing the things that I get to do. It's just a bit crazy sometimes. But yeah, mostly it's literally just like meetings and talking to people, making decisions. Right now at Pummel, I've been completely rebuilding all of the gamification. We've already finished the tokenomics, which is fantastic. At Motor, it's just about keeping the ship running. So working with marketing, working with tokenomics, getting vesting contracts done, working on legal stuff, working on new partnerships that we're working with, new growth, all that stuff. So yeah, it's super busy and super, super fun.
You sound so stimulated and you're loving every second of
Absolutely, dude.
Beautiful. Love to hear it.
My day's really simple, man. I'm keeping up with Twitter, especially being someone who's very new to the space. I'm always on Twitter. If you're getting into Web3, you definitely need to get on that and need to be present on it. So I'm trying to post more. But other than that, man, it's simple. In between clients, I'm working on new music. I'm trying to find new ways to be as unique as possible. I'm trying to find ways to be as commercial as possible, but still maintaining my own sound without biting too much from what's popping today, because I think it's important to be thinking in the future. You know what I mean? I mean, like, I don't listen to a lot of current pop music because I'm trying to be the pop music. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm trying to make what's hot in 4 years, not right now. So that's really what I'm doing right now. Yeah.
I love it. I love
also,
it.
Also, I don't know if you guys get to shill yourselves very much, but this is a conversation. I want to hear about you guys. What's a day in a life for Oz NFT podcast?
Oh, we...
I'd love to hear about it.
We get up. I scream at myself in the mirror. I do some burpees, drink black coffee.
He does burpees everywhere. We literally nearly missed our flight on the way here because he was doing burpees. That's a kick in.
It helps with anxiety management. we're working with devs, beautiful people like yourselves. Yeah. We're constantly reaching out to artists, brands, businesses. I don't know how many businesses we've messaged. Like jumping in and out of Twitter spaces, hosting podcasts. As of late, I've been diving straight into like writing smart contracts and how to communicate those needs to devs. That's been an amazing challenge. Josh, you've been like doing an excellent job in video editing and making sure our content is clear, concise, and consistent. Engaging on Twitter, we love it. We love it. We spend all our time doing this, and I mean, just like you guys, I think it's such a blessing to work with someone that you trust and respect and has your back. Because it is quite daunting to do it, or like to do it by yourself. I couldn't imagine doing it by myself. I couldn't. Yeah,
bro, I will. Like, I tips for Dora, because when I was learning to build smart contracts, there was a month of me sitting in a room banging my head against a wall. It is like coding is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, it's definitely not straightforward.
No, no, no.
Trying to communicate what you need to someone to do it too. It's like talking two different languages.
Absolutely.
I guess that's a little bit about us. And I just want to thank you guys for joining us. Shout out Daniel, MotorDAO, Pummel, Jack Space. And Elemante.
Emanate,
sorry. Yes. Shout out Daniel.
Downmaster Dan.
Can we clap that one? Shout out Downmaster Dan. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course.
Downmaster at Pummel and at MotorDAO. Big shout out. And then Jack McGraw, building a Web3 artist-orientated space, pioneer in the music industry and Web3. Thank you so much for joining us today, guys. Really appreciate your time, energy, and effort.
Man, that's love. That's love.
Thank you, guys. We really appreciate it. Can't wait to build together.
Let's get it.
Let's go.
Absolutely, man.